the language of this conference is English, but we have translation, interpretation for English and from Italian as well for everybody. So the questions can be made in Portuguese or in Italian or English. I would like to say thanks to all of you for being here, especially to the commissioner and to the rapporteur, this is MEP Gardini, that came from Italy to be with us. But especially to all think tankers that normally are attending to EN events, on behalf of the chairman of the Instituto Sá Carneiro, we are hosting here in the Parliament this meeting, so important meeting, after a so problematic summer in Portugal. And I would like to, in the name of my party, of our think tank, and of the organization of this meeting, I would like to say thanks to all the structure that is here, the main responsibles from the civil protection from Portugal, the academic sector, the firemen, the military, and everybody that deals with these kind of problems, with the civil protection, my colleagues from the parliament, and all the persons who decided to come here, from the local mayors to the firemen, the volunteers, the professionals, and all the others that join us to debate this topic. I think this is the first opportunity for the Commission to introduce in Portugal and to explain this mechanism, how it's going to work. Mr. Dear Commissioner, I'm supposed to tell you that the expectations are very, very high, and we count a lot with the EU support on these topics, the EU support to help us to face this situation that many of us faced during the last summer. I came from a very small village where 70% of the forests burned. But we are ready to do it again, to build it again, with the help of the EU, with the help of these persons, but especially the main target of all of us is to avoid a new situation like this. We should show to our country that we learn and we can avoid a similar situation in the future. We can learn with this. But more than ever, we count with the EU support, with your support, to face this situation, and we are able to work as an example for the other countries, because our knowledge, our expertise from most of these people could be very helpful for this mechanism. And I would like to say thanks to both of you and to Paulo Rangel to organize this with us here in the Parliament. I wish you a great seminar. I'll be here to help, and especially to try to help to build links with the Commission and try to establish a new mechanism, more efficient and more helpful for the Portuguese citizens, but also to all our European citizens. I would say, dear Commissioner, that some people are trying to say that it's very important for Portugal to have here the headquarters of this mechanism. More important than having here the headquarters is to have a fast response and prepositioned means, planes, helicopters, and so on, that could be near Portugal, or who knows, in Portugal, during these seasons that we know that could cause problems to all of us. So, thank you very much to all of you. I wish you a nice seminar, and thank you very much.
So, very good morning. Kalimera, buongiorno. First, I would like naturally to thank the Francisco Sá Carneiro Institute that is here shared by Duarte Marques, and also the parliamentary group of PSD, our party, a party member of EPP, because they are hosting this meeting. So I would like to thank them for their openness to debate these issues. I indeed know that they are very committed with this cause that is a very, very strong one. Then I would like also to say that it's for me a pleasure to be here, because I am a former member of this House, and to meet here some colleagues and former colleagues, and especially I would mention two. One that was my chair of parliamentary group, Luís Marques Guedes, when I started as a member of parliament. He's probably one of the persons One person probably who I learned most in parliamentary terms. So today I'm a parliamentarian in the European Parliament, but I still owe to this initial experience really a lot. And also Maria Luisa Albuquerque, our former finance minister, and also Secretary of State before that, that is really responsible for the recovery that Portugal has made. So this is not politically correct to say today, but we must stress that. So we owe her and her team a lot, all the country, all the population, and even European Union, because we are a success in European Union, because we made the job, and there were people that were enough responsible and have the, I'd say, the spirit of sacrifice to know what was needed to do in the right time. That being said, I would start to say that when I got here and I started to see so many cases and codes, everything, everywhere, I find that we are really in a rescue mode here. So the atmosphere is good to debate the European mechanism of civil protection, because if you look around, we are in a very informal way working here. And then also this room, I would like to our foreign members of the panel, I would like to say that this used to be the room of the second chamber of the Parliament. Portugal has only one chamber with the constitution from 76, but this room is normally used as a reflection chamber. So a lot of events where we think about policies, where we assess, debate, we try to find new trends. So we use this room to this kind of events. And it's exactly that we are doing here today. And so we have here, I would say, the proper environment to have such a debate. To end these introductory words, I would like naturally to welcome Christos Stylianides, our commissioner, that is totally committed with this cause. Probably you are not aware, not all of you, but some sure are, that immediately after the second wave of fire, so in 15th of October, he launched the process. He understood that it was the window opportunity to finally create something that was already in mind of a lot of European politicians, but also of European Commission. I myself have put a question to Juncker in September in the State of the Union speech about the European Protection Civil, European Force, not only protection civil protection mechanisms, but something more ambitious. But probably it will be a further step in the future. But this was really a very important thing. And so we have not only the politician that is in charge of this matter, but someone that is totally committed as a person with this cause. And then the same I would say to Elisabetta Gardini, that is the rapporteur for the ENVI committee to this issue of the European Union civil protection mechanism. And as you know, Italy also has an unfortunate experience of natural catastrophes, especially earthquakes, as we know, and also fires and also floods. So there is plenty of experience and of matter to address these issues. And I would also like to stress that he is not with us today only because we have a debate on structural funds in another meeting here in Lisbon, but José Manuel Fernandes, our member of PSD in European Parliament, is the rapporteur in Budget Committee for the financial issues of the EU civil protection mechanism. So we are in our group of PSD in European Parliament and DPP in European Parliament, totally devoted to this cause. This is a priority for us, we are, I'd say, in the first front of fight for this establishment and consolidation of this mechanism. So, I think now is time to start. We managed to do something that is very important when you have a casualty or when you have an event that is not so good, is to be very quick and quite rapid. And that is the case because the panel should start at 10 and it will start at 7 to 10. So we are anticipating the disaster. Thank you. As you know, only a bureaucratic thing. If you need translation, because Elisabetta Gardini, I think you'll speak in Italian.
Yes, I will speak in Italian because I feel more comfortable. And
and it's very beautiful for us. It's like music for us.
It's very nice.
Thank you, Paolo. Because what I would like to tell you is something that is very sensitive for me, so I feel better if I can express you in my language. So, thank you, Commissioner. Grazie a tutti i colleghi. Io volevo, prima di dare la parola ai due interventi principali di questo nostro incontro, spendere due parole, perché io ho avuto l'onore di essere la relatrice del nuovo meccanismo di protezione civile europeo dall'inizio, da quando per la prima volta il Parlamento se ne è occupato nella scorsa legislatura, perché grazie al trattato del funzionamento dell'Unione Europea noi avevamo per la prima volta la base legale per occuparci della protezione civile, l'articolo 196 del trattato. Credo di essere stata scelta anche perché italiana e all'Italia si riconosceva di avere una grande esperienza, purtroppo per tutte le catastrofi naturali che negli anni abbiamo dovuto affrontare. Però ho scoperto qualche cosa che da italiana, non essendone me ne mai occupata in prima persona, non avevo capito. Ho capito che cosa è la protezione civile. E la protezione civile è qualche cosa che quando tu ti ci avvicini non riesci più ad abbandonarla e capisci quanto sia fondamentale. È un punto di vista dal quale conoscere la storia delle proprie comunità, conoscere la storia delle proprie genti, è la possibilità di amare ancora di più la propria gente, perché la conosci là nel momento in cui la comunità viene ferita, là nel momento in cui il meglio di una comunità ha la possibilità di esprimersi al massimo. E allora la protezione civile in Italia, brevissimamente, è nata con il terremoto del Friuli Venezia Giulia nel 1976, con un uomo straordinario che anche il commissario conosce, che è l'onorevole Zamberletti. E lì si è capito che c'era bisogno di qualche cosa di più della semplice solidarietà, perché Zamberletti vide arrivare in Friuli, scosso da quel terremoto drammatico che aveva distrutto intere città e la comunità, migliaia e migliaia di italiani pronti a dare aiuto. Ma il commissario dovette, con la morte nel cuore, dirgli: tornatevene a casa, perché voi ci create problemi, non ci date aiuto. E lì si è cominciato a ragionare. La formazione, l'organizzazione, quello che serviva, le persone che ancora oggi vogliono, quando succede qualcosa, restare vicino ai loro luoghi. Zamberletti, quando racconta oggi quelle storie, crea ancora emozione e commozione quando racconta di come, per esempio, requisì tutte le roulotte perché arrivava l'inverno e le persone non potevano stare al freddo, e ci fu una rivolta di tutte le persone che dicevano: e noi poi come andremo in vacanza senza le nostre roulotte? E però rispetto ai tempi, e al 31 di marzo, prima del periodo estivo, le roulotte tornarono in perfetto stato e tutte con un mazzo di fiori dentro. Ecco, io non so, io mi commuovo quando sento queste cose e mi sono innamorata della protezione civile, e tutto il mio impegno lo voglio mettere perché questa protezione civile diventi quel volto dell'Europa dal quale si può ripartire, perché è inutile, commissario, che ce lo nascondiamo, l'Europa purtroppo di questi tempi non gode di buonissima fama. Però l'Europa che lei rappresenta, l'Europa che il meccanismo di protezione civile rappresenta, piace, come dice Eurobarometro, al 90% degli europei. Quindi è quell'Europa dalla quale noi possiamo e dobbiamo ripartire. Rassicurando gli Stati membri che a volte sono, perché lo sa, il più grande alleato è il Parlamento, a volte gli Stati membri sono preoccupati, ma lo capiamo. Pensate che non abbiamo potuto mettere nel primo documento di protezione, del protezione civile europea, la definizione di protezione civile, perché noi partiamo da oramai 27, erano 28 stati che hanno situazioni molto diverse, dove addirittura le parole protezione civile non vengono nemmeno pronunciate, perché magari hanno sistemi completamente diversi, come il Regno Unito che ha solamente i vigili del fuoco. Quindi io sono veramente felice di vedere che questo tema è nelle mani del commissario Stylianides, che lo interpreta, credo, davvero con la passione e con la determinazione che ci vuole, e anche con la rapidità, perché i tempi con cui avete messo in campo questo rafforzamento, questa revisione della protezione civile, creando uno strumento che dovrà affiancarsi agli Stati, credo sia davvero una cosa alla quale dobbiamo rispondere con altrettanta rapidità per essere pronti prima della prossima estate. E allora è con veramente il piacere e l'onore più grande che io do adesso la parola al commissario Christos Stylianides per il suo intervento. Grazie, commissario.
For your introduction remarks, and because you remind us a lot of things about the Italian efficiency in this very difficult field, and of course you reminded us about the first pioneers, Mr. Giambelletti. Yes. Dear colleagues, Paolo, Duarte, thank you so much. And of course, if you allow me, my dear colleagues, first responders. And I strongly believe that it's an honor for me to be here with you as part of this family of the first responders, because I know well your dedication and your commitment to fight against natural disasters. And I saw here in Lisbon, when we welcomed together the brave men and women, firemen and women, when they arrived from Chile, and when European solidarity have shown in tangible manner that Europe can offer assistance even far away from the European borders. And I'm very proud as commissioner in charge of civil protection mechanism, because Portuguese firemen, firewomen, brave firemen and women, they manage to be there where the obligation called them to help vulnerable people and to help some people who are affected by natural disasters. So I have to say again that it's an honor to me to be together with you today in Lisbon. Of course, thank you also very much for giving me the opportunity to address this seminar. And of course, my dear colleagues and the Instituto Francisco Sá Carneiro. I'm good about pronunciation? No. So, it's not bad. So, my dear friends, the timing for this seminar could not be better. Why? Because we are now presenting and discussing rescue. As Elisabetta and Paolo already said, we are in the process in order to promote the idea of upgrading the current system of the European Civil Protection Mechanism. And of course, as you know, because of our rules, institutional rules, we have to communicate, we have to discuss with our colleagues in the European Parliament and of course with our member states. It's not easy goal, frankly speaking, but I strongly believe that we have very powerful arguments in order to manage and to achieve this upgrade of the current system of the civil protection mechanism. Here today, I'm particularly pleased to be part of this event because I saw that we gather here with a lot of strong supporters of rescue. And this is quite important because we can exchange views and to find the best way in order to promote this difficult objective. But let me take this opportunity to give a special thanks, first of all, of course, ladies first, to Elisabetta Gattini, my dear friend, my dear colleague, when we were together MEPs, who is the rapporteur of this report of the Union Civil Protection Mechanisms, and I strongly believe that Elisabetta is one of the most important pillars in order to promote this idea. Thank you so much. At the same time, of course, I would like to say special thanks to my dear friend Paolo for his commitment and dedication for this purpose, and of course to my dear friend Jose Manuel Fernandez, because we discuss a lot about this initiative and we agreed not only on the substance of this initiative but also in our step-by-step attempt and efforts to promote this idea. So, at the same time, I'm really happy we are having this event in Lisbon, in Portugal. I'm a fan of Lisbon, frankly speaking. First of all, because Lisbon is an extremely beautiful city. Yes. With unique hospitality, very welcoming and very warm. And thank you so much for this. Secondly, because Portugal has already supported rescue at the highest political level. President Marcelo de Souza and Prime Minister António Costa already voiced their support. And this is quite important for us inside our institutions. Also, Portuguese member of the European Parliament actively supported rescue inside European Parliament, as I said. And third, because Portugal is a country that has contributed to and benefited from the European civil protection mechanism in many cases. But finally, the tragic events in Portugal, as Paolo already mentioned last summer, were more or less the catalyst that led to our proposal to reform and strengthen this system through rescue. Sometimes in our life, even inside Europe, unfortunately, we need this catalytic role of such painful experience in order to promote such ideas. Sorry for this, but this is the hard reality. As Jean-Claude Juncker, President of the Commission, said, the European Union should offer more than condolences in this painful experience. Europe is a continent of solidarity, and we must be better prepared than before. And of course, faster in helping our member state on the front line. I know that a robust civil protection mechanism, the creation of rescue, is our joint priority. And give me the chance to make a sort of description of the story of the current system. In December 2013, as European Union, we created the Union Civil Protection Mechanism as we know it today. It established the 24/7 Emergency Response Coordinator Center that monitored disasters inside and outside Europe, in Brussels. And since 2014, this mechanism was activated 92 times. 92. Within Europe, of course, and across the world. And only last year, the mechanism was activated 32 times. For the last year, 2017. This definitely shows that affected countries could not address disasters on their own. But even in many times, the mechanism was overburdened. And this is the hard reality on the ground. As Commissioner responsible for this, I'm proud of what we have achieved through the current system. But my dear friends, the current system has already reached its limits. And we must adapt to today's changing reality. This is our obligation, this is our moral duty to our citizens. Climate change obliges us to enhance our abilities to respond to natural disasters as soon as possible. And we have a lot of indications, scientific indications, scientific proofs for this. And the Global Trends 2018 report is projecting that extreme weather phenomena will increase. Heat waves, storms, droughts, landslides, river floods, all natural disasters. This is the prediction, the projection of all scientific institutes. So, climate change is real. Climate change is here. Climate change is not fake news. I totally disagree with Trump's denial of climate change. And this is why European Union remains very committed regarding Paris Agreement about climate change. Dear friends, natural disasters are intensifying. They are more violent, more frequent, more complex. And this is the hard reality. And unfortunately, this is the new normal. And definitely, they are affecting every corner of Europe, from south to north, west to east. So it is a collective obligation. It's not only obligation for South Europe. Therefore, we need to be realistic and pragmatic. And we need to be smart enough to formulate this collective response to this new reality. So we must strengthen solidarity in Europe as natural disasters and emergencies increase to benefit all our European citizens, to benefit all people across Europe. And as I said, last year it has been very bad. We witnessed intense forest fires here in Portugal. We saw, and it's a very painful experience to remember these people, the victims. Also in Croatia, in Spain, in France, in Italy, Greece, even in Ireland. 2 years ago, we saw forest fires in Greenland. Can you imagine to see forest fires in Greenland? We saw forest fires in Sweden. And I remember one French and Italian plane which were activated through mechanisms in order to provide assistance in Sweden. So, yes, climate change is happening now. And at the same time, we also saw deadly storms in Germany, in Poland, Romania, Czech Republic, Greece, everywhere in Europe. We knew this already, but we are reminded again and again. No country, even big countries, is immune to disasters. And another painful example is what was happening in California, what was happening in Texas. And as European Union, we deliver Copernicus map system to US in order to deal with such natural disasters. So no country, even the biggest, sophisticated and most efficient country, is immune to disasters. And because of the natural disasters, the human loss and the economic damage are huge. Some believe that Southern Europe is more exposed to extreme phenomena and natural disasters. This is only partly true. The reality is that no region is spared. This is the reality on the ground, and I don't want to mention any figures about this. My dear colleague Johannes is here, the director, and he knows very well all these figures about our funding through Solidarity Fund and others, and where is the most costly problem inside Europe. So in the European Union and worldwide, no country can deal with this new phenomena alone. This is the real fact in our nowadays. Therefore, we must adapt to the new reality. Be better prepared to respond to and to prevent. Be better prepared to protect. And this is the real meaning of a Europe that protects. This is what European citizens expect from all of us, as politicians, as European institutions. And as I said many times, from my medical origin profession, prevention is better than cure. And this is precisely why the European Commission proposed this new system, to respond to this new reality. This is rescue. This is the upgrade of the current system. Most of you maybe are familiar with this proposal, but I take this opportunity to say a few words about what rescue is, and I would like to clarify some misunderstandings. You know well about these misunderstandings in some meetings with your colleagues in Brussels and everywhere. And as commissioner responsible for this, I would like to clarify this. A sort of misunderstandings. First of all, rescue is based on our current system. Of course, current system is based on voluntary contribution from our member states. However, as I said, this current system has already reached its limits. Because of climate change, we face multiple crises in multiple countries simultaneously. This is the real problem. And our member states cannot provide assistance in the critical time to the other of our member states in need because of their own emergencies. And this is why in Portugal we saw this problem last October. So, to mitigate this shortcoming, and for the first time, rescue will establish a limited number of well-defined own operational capacities at EU level to respond. This is quite important to clarify and to understand in our discussions. And when I say European level, I do not mean that the assets will be centralized. I personally against any centralization. I always insist on decentralization in all aspects of our European activities. So, they should be decentralized in member states close to the high risk areas. This is our intention, this is our political decision. Moreover, through rescue, we are strengthening the current system by providing more EU money to operations when assets from the voluntary pool are used. So we can upgrade the current system, the voluntary pool also. And for me, this picture is the most important picture to clarify everything about rescue. This pyramid. Both two pyramids. So we need to ensure that when member states cannot offer any help, there is a safety net that could come in and support all member states in need and to ensure better protection of our citizens, because rescue is precisely that, a safety net when and where our member states and their national capacities and resources are not enough, are overwhelmed. And this is why I focus on exceptional cases in extraordinary emergencies. At the same time, and in addition, we can also make economy of scale. By sharing the effort to develop costly assets to address critical capacity gaps, we are making these savings in other areas, in our European initiative. And why not also in this field of civil protection? As simple as that. And this is the definition of the European institution as political organization. To find ways in order to be in practice about economy of scale. Dear friends, let me be clear. Rescue will not replace national and regional capacities to respond to disasters. Just to complement again and again in exceptional circumstances. This is, I think, it's quite important to understand in our exchange of views. And rescue is not an attempt from the European Commission to centralize competences in the field of civil protection. No. I insist on decentralization. So, what we are proposing is an evolution of the current system. It's not a revolution. It's an evolution. This is the correct, the right wording about our intention. So, European Union has a supporting role in this area of civil protection, and this is precisely what we intend to do, supporting our member state in exceptional cases. When a disaster strikes, member states in national, regional, and city levels are primarily responsible. So the primary responsibility remains with our member state at all national, regional, local levels. Because I strongly believe, and they know better than me, that the most important is the first response. And first responders are the local authorities, mayors, your staff, all of you, and of course, the local communities, our volunteers. So, the primary responsibilities remains with our member states. But, and I focus and I repeat this, in case their capacities, national capacity resources, are overwhelmed, rescue will help. Rescue has to be there in order to provide this additional assistance to deal with such very magnitude phenomena. And because I strongly believe that solidarity comes with responsibility, and this is why I focused on this, that primary responsibility remains with our member state. And this is why, through this initiative, rescue is not only about response. Rescue is also about prevention and preparedness. We all know that the most cost-effective way to deal with disasters is to prevent. This is a sort of principle. But our recent experience shows that existing measures some member states are taking to prevent and prepare are not enough. Prevention and preparedness must become a top priority, especially for member states who face frequent natural disasters. Today, we often don't know if and how member states plan and implement prevention and preparedness. All member states must develop consistent risk assessment and risk mitigation planning. We need definitely this assessment and these national plans. And here, let me take this opportunity to commend Portugal for your adoption of fundamental changes to your fire defense system. This is a solid step in the right direction. I'm looking forward to discussing these changes and the prevention and preparedness measures adopted with Prime Minister Costa and Minister Gabrida in my meetings after this meeting in lunchtime and in the afternoon. And also I would like to discuss the process of implementation and what more Portugal can and should do in this difficult field. And we have to admit that a strengthened civil protection mechanism with a bigger budget must go hand in hand with more responsibility at the national level. It is a sort of precondition. And I want to be crystal clear. In order for rescue to work, our member states need to develop their own prevention and preparedness capacities. They have to strengthen these capacities and capabilities, and we are here to encourage and support that. This is our role as European Commission. And through rescue, I strongly believe that we can cultivate a culture of prevention among all our member states and our citizens. And frankly speaking, in many of our member states, this necessity still needs to improve. We have to focus on this to cultivate a culture of prevention. And that is why the establishment of a Union Civil Protection Knowledge Network is part of the rescue proposal. And I strongly believe that we can offer opportunities through this network for exchanging expertise and skills and to have more joint exercises. We need this network in order to see together among our member states how to improve ourselves in many areas of this very demanding field. At the same time, I want to make sure that in the future, structural funds are more effectively directed to deal with prevention. My colleagues, Phil Hogan, Corina Gretsou, are on board in order to see together how to improve the effectiveness and the efficiency of the structural funds and agricultural funds in this prevention and preparedness field. And at the same time, I want to thank my good friend Carlos Moedas for his strong support through his responsibility in innovation and research, and we are both committed to this effort. Dear friends, your compatriot, Secretary General of the UN, Antonio Guterres, put in very well in his recent address to the UN General Assembly this expression. Climate change is moving faster than we are. Yes. So, I think we need to listen to his call and to respond to this new reality. And as I said, the scientific community is warning us. Risk created by climate change must be taken seriously. Money must be spent for adaptation and risk reduction if we want to keep people and livelihoods safe. Recent disasters have demonstrated that European solidarity is essential. But I have to repeat, solidarity comes with responsibility. Camps in prevention and preparedness showed that there is a clear need for more responsibility at the national level. Through rescue, we are responding to our citizens' requests for more solidarity with maximum efficiency and minimum bureaucracy. Not in theory, in practice, on the ground. And let there be no doubt. No member state must be left alone to cope with natural catastrophes. European solidarity is the foundation of our European family. It's our obligation to protect our common home, our citizens. So the time for action is now, because the next natural disaster is around the corner. And of course, this initiative is a real signal that Europe can help its citizens in a tangible way. With tangible solidarity. And I strongly believe that because it is a political initiative, we can demonstrate that Europe is not only speeches. It's not only papers, it's not only bureaucracy, it's something very tangible at a very critical time about our citizens, and we can save lives. So, my dear friends, thank you so much for this opportunity. I count on your full engagement to make rescue a reality, and I'm sure together we can make this happen and we can make a difference on the ground. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for your words, your speech. You are right. You need to protect our common home. This is the Europe we want to build all together. And you stress, you always stress, and you stressed even now, the prevention. Because prevention was a new chapter, and now you want to improve the prevention. You once said prevention has to be our obsession. And our obsession. And with prevention, we can help our citizens, because the losses from natural disasters are too huge. And I think that we can hear something about prevention from the next speaker. He's a very expert on forest fires. And we unfortunately, especially in this country, saw last summer what forest fires can provoke in terms of losses, also in terms of losses of human lives. So I give the floor, it doesn't need a presentation, to the Professor Dominique Xavier Viegas. Domingos. Domingos. What did they say? Domingos Xavier Viegas, sorry. And after the speech of the professor, of course, we opened the debate, the exchange of views.
Good morning, everybody. First of all, I'd like to compliment the commissioner, madam, and Paulo Rangel, and all the persons around the table, and authorities, and people present in this room. For me, it is a great honor and a responsibility to be invited to this very important meeting and to give this address on the situation of forest fires in Portugal. I will make this presentation on the fires in Portugal in 2017, as in my opinion, they were possibly the fact that triggered many actions and possibly also this intervention and this initiative of the European Commission. The structure of my presentation is this. I'll give a brief introduction, and then I'll speak about two major events. I'll speak more in detail on the fire of Pedrógão Grande, because although my team is studying both of them, we already produced a report on the first one, and we are now still on the process of writing the report on the second one. I consider that forest fires may have three basic regimes. One which I would call medium risk, in which fire protection measures work and are useful. A high risk, in which a fire may become a risk for population and suppression activities are still possible, and protection measures may work or may not work. And we have the third regime, that is the extremely high risk, in which it is necessary to protect mostly the people and fire suppression is virtually impossible. And also some of the measures of protection and prevention are not very effective. I think we have to realize this. And I suppose the Commissioner mentioned that we have to be prepared for the last type of events. And this is what exactly we had in Portugal in two very bad episodes. This table, I'm sorry, it is in Portuguese, but I think it can be very easily described. It deals with a physical aspect, that is the intensity of fire. That is the energy that is released by the flame front per meter of length. And it is somehow expressed also by the length of the flames. This is very well understood. And we have to realize that according to the level of the intensity, there is possibility of suppressing the fire with different methods. And you have to know that above a certain threshold, that in the current state of the art, it is assumed to be around 10 megawatt per meter, it is not possible to control fires. This is something that people that are not familiar with forest fires don't know, don't realize. People think that any forest fire can be or should be suppressed now and here, immediately. But this is not possible. And what we may have in many instances, in many fires, is that parts of the fire or large parts of the fire may be under these non-controllable conditions. So we cannot expect the civil protection, the firefighters, to be able to address this. And this is something that the citizens sometimes do not understand. As I said, in Portugal, we will always remember the year of 2007. First of all, because we had a great loss of human lives. And for me, this is the most important. We, in the statistics, we deal with the burned area, the number of fires, but we very rarely speak about the number of victims. And this year, it is mandatory. This is what marked our year. We had these two events, as I mentioned, around 17th of June, with 65, I'd say 68, because several people died later. And on 15th October, with 47 fatalities, but if you notice, with 210,000 hectares burned in a single day. If you look at the statistics of fire in Portugal, my presentation is mostly based in Portugal. I could have extended this to Europe, but I think we have so much to say about Portugal that it is sufficient. If you look here, we have we had two very bad years, 2003 with 430,000 hectares and 2005 with more than 300,000 hectares. But this year of 2017 was 500 hectares, was above that. This variation of the, let's say, number of hectares also shows one thing, that we cannot judge the goodness of a policy just for 1 or 2 years. We have to look at the trend. And we may have certain anomalous years that may, let's say, contradict everything that has been done. But we don't have to judge that we are out of the way because we have these, let's say, anomalous years. We cannot take all the trust from these outliers. The number of incidents, number of ignitions that we have in Portugal, it is well known that it's very, very large, this number. We have 20, 30,000 ignitions per year. Fortunately, in the last years, we have been diminishing them. But if you look at the lower curve, it shows the fires that become real fires above 1 hectare. And these, the number of these are much lower, and it also had the tendency of decreasing. But if you look at the figures for the last year, 2017, these two numbers are very close. It means that the initial attack was not effective this year. And this was due to the meteorological conditions, as I'll describe soon. The statistics of persons died is shown here. Also in this aspect, the year of 2017 is completely out of normal. But why we have this problem in Portugal, and I assume that also in other countries? If you look at the number of ignitions every day throughout the years, in this is a period of 5 years, you see that in some years, in some days, we have more than 500 ignitions in a single day. This is not, of course, in winter. It is in the peak of summer. In the other, this other year, we even have more than 600 ignitions in a single day. And, of course, this has an effect on the fire suppression, on the burned area. Here in this graph, we have the curves for periods of 5 years. And as you can see, when the number of fires per day increases, the burned area per day also increases. And it is not a linear relationship. It is more quadratic. And another thing that this graph shows is that when the number of fires is low, the initial attack has been improving and the curves improve from one period of 5 years to the next one. So we have been able to reduce the burnt area when the number of fires is small. But when the number of fires here is around 300, the system collapses. There is no difference between the various decades. And also in some very bad years, like for example 2017, we had this curve. So even for relatively non-many fires, the burned area per day was very high. The last point is a singular point. The other are averages, but the last one is the 15th October with 400 ignitions in a single day and with 200,000 hectares burned. As you can see, this is the reality. So, of course, we have to reduce the number of fires, the number of ignitions, and this should be a priority to our country and, I suppose, for many countries in Europe. In Portugal, we have the building of defense of the forest built upon three pillars. These three pillars is the Forest Service, the Civil Protection, and the National Guard. And in my opinion, this building is not in harmony. there is one pillar that is missing here. This fourth pillar that I'm preaching for many years, that I call population, because if you notice, all the other pillars are institutions from the state. It is as if the state comes and solves the problem on itself, without counting on the population, without counting with all other institutions of society. And I defend that all institutions of society should be part of the solution, should not be based only on government institutions. I suppose this idea can also be passed at upper levels, at European level as well. We cannot solve the problem only with institutions, let's say, from the state. We have to go to the population, to the people. And in this population, I include the scientific community. We are members of scientific community, and my research group is also working for more than 30 years now to solve this problem. This is a fire lab that we have built in central Portugal, near Coimbra. In it, we have several devices where we can study different aspects of fire behavior. And we have been specializing on situations in which people can be in danger. This particular device is a replication of a fire in a canyon, and we have been able to prove that this sort of fire, if you see this video, it is an experiment in that canyon. It's a very small table. It has 3 by 3 meters. The fuel is pine needles. The topography is fixed. There is no wind in the lab. And if you see, little by little, the shape of the flame changes. And what the firefighters see at the beginning as a small fire that they suppose they can reach there and squeeze it very easily with their boots, or they can wait at the top of the hill for the fire, or they can surround it very quickly. Little by little, the fire is creating its own dynamics, and the fire grows, and the flames grow, and the rate of spread increases little by little. This is something that many people don't realize, but I insist that everyone that is dealing with forest fires should know this. Because, you see, what we have now is this reality. If someone is working on that slope, he'll be caught by that. And don't be fooled, because this is a very small-scale experiment, because we have proven that the same facts, the same mechanisms occur in large-scale situations. And we have studied dozens of accidents in which dozens of people were killed by this situation. And we have also developed a model that shows that the rate of spread of the fire increases in the course of time, and it goes to very high values of the rate of spread. People think that this happens because there was a change in the conditions, there was a change in the wind, which is not. And this is something that we have taught to our firefighters in Portugal. They come to our laboratory and we give them training with the protocol that we have to, with the National Fire Brigade School. And all of our firefighters in Portugal have this situation in their minds. And they, fortunately, I think we have more or less won the battle for the safety of firefighters. In the last years, fortunately in Portugal, we did not have loss of lives of firefighters. We have now to win the battle of protecting the civilians. Another issue is the spot fires. We are also studying this. This is a sequence of photos in a fire some years ago. And I can tell you that the time between the first image and the last one is less than 2 minutes. And you can realize what could happen if someone is working in that pine stand near those flames. And if they do not squeeze those spot fires very quickly, they will be caught by the last situations in less than 2 minutes. So this shows how dangerous and how extreme fire can be. We are studying extreme fire behavior. And one of the problems we started to study some years ago was the junction of two fires. And we found that when two fires ignite very close, they spread like this, very fast. This problem was inspired to us by a situation that happened in Australia, in Canberra, in 2003. I mention these problems not just, let's say, for academic purpose, because this has to do with what I am saying, going to say later about the fire of Pedrógão. One problem that we face in Portugal, and I assume that also in many other European countries, is this problem of the wild and urban interface. It is the place where the forest, the people, the houses, and the fire meet. They come together. Unfortunately, our population doesn't clean the space around the houses. And in the last minutes, they are threatened by the fire. They feel in risk. They flee from their houses, and sometimes they are killed in the middle of a fire. This is what happened in 2007 in several ways. We work also to protect these people. We are developing systems to create water fences around houses and around villages. And we are working with some institutions in the concept of a safe house, at least to develop the preconditions that are required for a house to be safe for its inhabitants and for people that can get refuge there. This is a part of a wider program of a safe community that is being held with some local communities in central Portugal. Let's now come to the year of 2017. The year of 2017 was a very dry year. We had an intense drought, and this is expressed by this index that is a drought code. The black line is the average for the past 17 years, and you can see the year of reference 2005 in green. That was also a very bad year, and the year of 2017 in which you had very dry conditions, not only throughout the summer but also at the end of the summer as well. The initial spread index, this is a reflection of the wind presence, also was much above the average throughout this year. If you look at the 15th of October, it was very, very high. And the fire danger index, fire weather index that measures the fire danger, you can see was almost always above the average. And if you look at the 15th of October, it was a record value for Coimbra. And this explains what happened this year. We measure also the moisture content of fine fuels. This shows in red the results that we measured for pine litter in this year, and you can see that it is a very low value. The same for shrubs. We had some record low values this year. And the result was what you can see in this map. You can see the fires of June before the end of July. Then all the other fires between July and 15 October, and on the 15 October, these very large fires. You can see the fires go mostly in the center north of Portugal, from the sea to the interior, and they are very large fires. If you look at those two black spots, there are two fires larger than 50,000 hectares. This was not registered before in Portugal. Let's now look more carefully at the fire of Pedrógão. This was the first major disaster that we faced. In a day in which the temperature was above 46 degrees, the relative humidity was very low, we had these fires. Actually, at the same time, we had five or six ignitions, so this was a junction of five fires. But the most important is the fire of Pedrógão. This fire had two origins that I'll describe. We studied very detailed the meteorological conditions. The Meteo Institute studied the possibility of a thunderstorm having created conditions to initiate this fire. But we found that the origin of this fire was probably mostly linked to the electrical line that passed by the place of the origin here. And there was a second ignition 3 kilometers apart on the same electrical line nearby. And there was fortunately a camera that registers the image of the fires, several cameras, so we could follow what happened throughout the development of the fire. And this shows that initially, possibly the fire could have been controlled, but unfortunately this was not the case. And what happened after 6 o'clock, you see in these images, the thunderstorm approached the area of the fire and it modified the fire, and you can see the change of the smoke plume on the last two images. And after this happened, the fire became completely non-controllable. This is from the Meteo Institute, and these images show how the fire spread very fast. After this time, we had two fires that spread separately and they merged. And when they merged, they created very strong, intense phenomena of interaction, and some of the two fires spread very fast in very dangerous conditions. And if you look at this sequence of images, on the first you can see that fire is moving from right to left, but on the last one the fire is moving to the center. This means that the two fires merged and they are pushing the fire towards the center. After this time is when the personal disasters occurred after 8 o'clock in the afternoon. We studied in detail the fire. In this fire, we observed several non-common phenomena. For example, wind whirls. We found in several places trees broken like this, and we calculated that the wind that is necessary to break a tree like this, it needs a wind velocity of at least 220 kilometers per hour. We saw fire whirls, horizontal vortices, aerial flames, independent ground fires. People witnessed that some trees started to burn from the top down, without fire around them. They started to burn. And the result was the number of victims. This is the distribution of ages from the victims, and you can see all ages are represented there. Small kids, lots of people from middle age, entire families perished in this disaster. Most accidents occurred in a relatively small area, and the location of the accidents is here. My team studied in great detail each one of these accidents to learn lessons. I was personally on the day after in the area, and I helped to this work of picking the bodies in this road, and see some example. For example, from this house, a family of 9 people flew to the road in 4 cars. Afterwards, they left 2 of the cars and they went in 2 of them, and all of them died in the road. You can see the house suffered nothing. From this other house, 7 people of the same family also went away in 2 cars, and 3 of them died. This is another accident. I show this image. It shows some bodies. But to stress one point, that in many cases the victims were not caught by the fire itself. They perished. For example, you can see here the vegetation is very, let's say, dry by the heat, but it is not burned. And same happened to many persons. And we believe that many persons were not dead immediately. And if there was a better rescue, some of them could have been saved. I have this belief. Some people died in their houses, only 4 of them, and you have to believe that all of these losses could have been avoided if there was a better rescue service. But unfortunately, after this very strong spread, there was a great disruption of the communications, and all the services were not working properly, and there was not possibility of coordinating even the rescue. Here also another person died in the house that could have been rescued. This lady, she sells fish, and she was traveling with her car, selling fish. And this shows how this is the trajectory that she took. And she thought that she was fleeing from the fire, but wherever she went, the fire was behind her. And this shows that this was a case in which you could not run away from the fire easily. And finally, she survived, but she helped to save many people, but she was caught in the middle of the fire several times. Here in this village, some citizens saved their lives because they took refuge in the pond that is shown there in that mark. This map shows where the majority of the fatalities were held and the damage to the communities. We studied in great detail the damage to the houses. I'll not go in details with this. And just a few words about the fires of 15 and 16 of October. In this case, this day, we had more than 400 ignitions. There is 500, possibly it was 400. There were several causes for this, but I must stress one point. This was one day in which there were perfect conditions to burn. We are looking at the problem of forest fires as a case of safety, but it can also be an issue of security. Because if people that want to create havoc, want to create terrorism, they can make use of such conditions and start many, many fires. In this day, possibly it was citizens that were trying to burn debris, but it could have been other thing. I don't know if this simulation works. You will see here the Ophelia cyclone appear, and you'll notice in a moment how it spread very fast towards north and passed close to the coast of Portugal. This is again an indication of climate change, because this is not common to have cyclones near Portugal. And the result was this. You can see here lots of fires, big fires from south to north. There was this pine stand of Leiria that burned almost completely, and this was a very old pine stand. We lost many houses, many lives. Some people died in their homes because they were caught by the fire at night. And one of the things that this fire brought was also fire near large cities, as you can see examples. And a very important issue was the damage to industrial and enterprises. Several industrial areas were completely burned to the bottom. And this is something that has to be dealt with. To finish, I'll show you. This is one of the cases of the victims of one of the in the first fire. In this fire, in this place, in this car, two persons died of a family of four. And one of the people is this small girl. And this photo struck me from the beginning. And it is said her brother, I interviewed him, and heard him say before she was caught by the fire, "Mama, what is this?" And for me, this is a challenge. I think that we have to try to address this question, try to understand this problem, try to protect and to save these people and not to leave these people die. We have been speaking about recovery of the investment. And I bring you this diagram. The present situation is what we have at the beginning. Very little investment in prevention, some in suppression, and many huge losses. I don't have figures there, but we can provide. This is the situation for Portugal. What is proposed is that we increase the fire prevention. Possibly this will bring a reduction on the fire suppression costs eventually, and hopefully the decrease on the fire losses till we get to the final regime of less investment in fire suppression. To finish, to conclude, I'd like to say that the fires that occurred in Portugal put in evidence many limitations of the fire protection system, and show that in some conditions, the priority has to be entirely given to protection of persons. Some measures have to be taken to protect the public in the case that no forces can reach them to give protection. So this was felt many times. A better and stronger EU civil protection system is part of the solution, but it will not work always. With the change of climatic conditions, we have to realize that similar conditions of fire spread will occur in the future, and even more frequently. We cannot accept that the same consequences in terms of loss of life happen again. And I hope...
Thank you, Professor Javier, for your presentation. It's very impressive and a proof that we have to work quickly.
As soon as possible,
yes. Now we open the floor for the exchange of view. Of course, everybody can intervene. I just ask you to be before your question or remarks, to present yourselves, to say who you are, from which organizations, or whatever. So, who want to open? Patricia, Kaspar. Oh, okay, please.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of the Portuguese National Authority for Civil Protection, just a few words and a few remarks. First of all, to thank the organization for this excellent initiative to bring to Lisbon a very important discussion that it's being held nowadays at EU level, but of course involves all member states and all interested parties in what we are discussing now. Good morning to all the assistants, good morning members of Parliament, my colleagues from Civil Protection, and also the representatives from the Ministerial Commission's office and the European Commission also. We are deeply committed to follow this new proposal to reinforce the European Civil Protection Mechanism. We are aware that we faced in 2017, as Professor Domingos Xavier just explained, one of the worst years in our history in terms not only forest fires, but generally speaking for civil protection. It was, in fact, a huge challenge. We lost more than 100 lives, and this is not recoverable. We had a huge burnt area, and we are learning. We are learning, and we are hoping that this change, which will be a difficult discussion, but we are hoping that this change in the EU mechanism will also bring an added value. As the Commissioner said, it's not only discussing response, it's of course discussing prevention. More than anything else, it's discussing prevention, but also discussing preparedness, and that's what we are doing. It was an exceptional year. We had meteorological conditions which we don't face every day. We fight every summer thousands and thousands of fires successfully. Portuguese firefighters and all the other forces fight every year thousands of fires. And we had an exceptional year last summer with exceptional results. And we are drawing, and we draw already lots of lessons learned. And, of course, we are trying very hard to integrate all these lessons learned in the next campaign, in the next fire season. We have critical areas already identified on which we have to work. Some of these changes will be structural changes, so we cannot expect results in 1 month. Some of the things will take time. We are talking about forest management, land management, social development problems in the interior areas, which we'll have to integrate in our efforts. We are talking about force capacitation for large events, and this is also connected to the raising awareness of the population, and which is also connected to early warning systems, which will have to work in a different way so that we can, in fact, involve people, as it was already said this morning. Wrapping all up together, I think we are discussing about creating safer and more resilient communities, not only to face forest fires, but to face whatever kind of emergency we can have. And in Portugal as well, in Europe, we can have forest fires, but we can also have other devastating disasters which can cause mass casualties, and we cannot forget this. We're talking about earthquakes, floods, terrorist scenarios. We all know that this is not a theory. This is very practical things that we are speaking. And now coming back to the mechanism, as I said in the beginning, we are committed to support the Proposals Commission in reinforcing this capacity. Portugal is probably one of the EU states with a higher number of activations of the mechanism. We are not proud, but we are grateful that this tool exists. We were there since the beginning, and I still remember the first negotiations when we tried to put this in place back in the year 2000. It was a challenge, but we made it. And I think that Europe should be grateful, European citizens should be grateful that the mechanism exists, because it has proven its added values several times, not only in Portugal, but also outside Portugal. Portugal is a requesting state, but it's also an assisting state. We have been together with other European countries responding to several emergencies, and Mr. Commissioner just remembered the Chilean intervention last year for a forest fire, a huge forest fire scenario. But we were also in the earthquake of Iran, Algeria, Morocco. We were in Haiti in 2010, one of the most devastating disasters we had in the world. And we were there expressing also our solidarity. Yes, medical corps dealing with Ebola crisis also in Africa. So it's a wide range of emergencies and scenarios where the mechanism can make actually a difference. It will not replace our capacities. It's a complementary tool, and this is really important. But we know that when the same disaster affects simultaneously different member states, voluntary actions may not be enough. So we need to have a stronger capacity. I think Europe deserves this. European citizens deserve this better capacity to respond together to disasters. So thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for all the presentations which were made this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I give the floor to a mayor. This is the first front, no? The mayor of Sardual, Miguel Borges.
Muito bom dia. Sorry, but I speak in Portuguese. Muito, muito obrigado pelas vossas apresentações. Eu fui testemunha no terreno daquilo que se passou em 2017, no meu território, perto do meu território, mas desde que sou Presidente de Câmara tenho vindo a alertar e a dizer aquilo que eu entendo, que o nosso sistema de proteção civil está assente em pés de barro. Ao longo de muitos anos, na minha opinião, com um único culpado, o sistema político. Políticas de fundo necessárias ao nosso sistema de proteção civil, constantemente adiadas, e por vezes eu dizia que um dia uma tragédia ia acontecer, e essa tragédia aconteceu no dia 17 de junho em Pedrógão, e a partir daí foi o reconhecimento de todo um sistema assente em pés de barro que ruiu como um castelo de cartas. A minha preocupação continua, e permitam-me que a partilhe convosco, porque temo voltar a ter razão em 2018. Era muito importante que nós olhássemos uma vez por todas, e volto a dizer, de todo não considero que o problema seja operacional, é um problema político que não tem dado as melhores condições para que os operacionais dos vários pilares possam desenvolver o seu trabalho nas melhores condições. Permitam-me que faça uma referência, por exemplo, ao nosso Sistema Nacional de Defesa da Floresta contra Incêndios, que o Sr. Professor referiu, e referiu os três pilares, acrescentando mais um pilar com o qual eu concordo. Mas permitam que manifeste a minha preocupação, começando, por exemplo, pelo Instituto de Conservação da Natureza e Florestas. Neste momento, é um instituto que não tem meios suficientes para cumprir a sua função, nomeadamente meios humanos. Muitos daqueles projetos que os municípios tinham que se pronunciar sobre projetos de reflorestação, muitos deles passavam, na sua maioria, por deferimento tácito, por falta de capacidade de análise desses mesmos projetos. Neste momento o que acontece, houve alterações legislativas, é claro, que os parceiros dos municípios passam a ser vinculativos, pelo menos para 10 hectares ou mais de plantações, pelos eucaliptos então são independentemente do tamanho, mas de qualquer das formas continuamos a ter problemas nos nossos territórios que era importante ultrapassar. Por exemplo, projetos de reflorestação ou mal feitos ou até mesmo ilegais, em que nós fazemos levantamos o auto de notícia e depois não há capacidade de resposta do ICNF para atuar sobre estes autos de notícia. Posso dizer que no município de Sardual temos alguns autos de notícia já com 2 anos levantados e até agora nada foi feito. Quase 2 anos, abril, maio de 2016. Por isso isto é um pilar que se continuarmos assim vamos nos repetir infelizmente 2017, 18, 19 e 20. Um outro pilar também fundamental, GNR. Aquilo que verificamos no nosso território e no interior, principalmente, há uma carência de meios de GNR superior a 4 mil homens e mulheres, claro. Só na minha região posso-vos dizer que, por vezes, há uma patrulha com 2 homens para 3 municípios. Posso-vos dizer que não há muito tempo tive um incêndio no meu concelho, a GNR apareceu 1 hora e meia depois de ter sido dado o sinal de alerta. Não só no aspecto da prevenção, mas também no apoio, depois aos operacionais que estão no terreno, e o ano passado fui testemunha de situações em que os operacionais, os bombeiros, estavam no terreno e não havia um único elemento da GNR a protegê-los, ou pelo menos a cortar estradas, para que não se repetisse situações que já se repetiram no passado. Um outro pilar, para mim fundamental, claro, e que estamos aqui, chama-se Autoridade Nacional de Proteção Civil. Permita que vos diga que falamos com muita frequência nos incêndios de Pedrógão, como exemplo e outros mais, mas é óbvio que nenhum incêndio nasce grande. Todos os incêndios nascem numa pequena ignição. Agora, aquilo que me assusta é a nossa incapacidade de resposta, de tempo de resposta eficiente e eficaz perante a ignição. E aqui julgo que há muito a fazer no âmbito da Autoridade Nacional de Proteção Civil, porque aquilo que sei e que me dizem, qualquer pequena ignição, no máximo 20, 30 minutos, se houver uma resposta eficaz, um incêndio nunca chega a grande. E aqui acho que a União Europeia poderá e deverá e estará certamente disponível para nos ajudar, para ajudar o nosso país, também com meios suficientes para que os operacionais tenham condições de trabalhar e que nós não venhamos a ter todas as tragédias que tivemos até agora. É certo que o ordenamento da floresta é fundamental, mas tudo o que de bom possamos fazer a partir de agora terá os seus resultados não imediatos, mas daqui a muitos anos. Uma coisa é certa, continuamos a ter ainda floresta desordenada, continuamos a ter ainda mão criminosa ou negligente nos incêndios, continuamos a ter incêndios. O que nós não conseguimos é ultrapassar a nossa incapacidade de resposta construída ao longo de muitos anos. E era urgente ultrapassarmos esta situação. Muito obrigado.
Thank you. We have another mayor. I think it's very important to have mayors because we saw your pyramid about solidarity. It works respecting the subsidiarity principle. That is very important for civil protection. So I think it's very important to have the voice, the experience from the mayor. So I give the floor to Silverio Regalado, mayor of Vagos.
Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to thank for the invitation for being here. I'm mayor of Vagos. Vagos is near the shore. And I was expecting everything, but I was not expecting a fire like we have in the October of this year. First of all, I want to say that we have magnificent fire departments, firemen and firewomen that as previously Patricia told, fight many fires every year. And this year was a different year. 2017 was very different. And I absolutely agree with you, Mr. Commissioner, when you mentioned that the climate change as the main responsible for the recent disasters in Portugal and in Europe. You also mentioned that the prevention must come first and the necessity of the adaptation measures to the combat of climate change. My first question is, do you think that the European Union could finance a huge forest planning politics in Portugal? Secondly, Mr. Commissioner, you also mentioned Mr. António Guterres. As you mentioned, he recently said that climate change is running faster. I think, and this is just my opinion, it's not a question, that the European Union should have restrained politics for countries that who don't respect the Paris Agreement. This is only my opinion. At least in the recent fires in Portugal, the citizens were the most important civil protection mechanism. I think it's possible to European Union to finance a civil protection formation for citizens. People must know how to react on the with the natural disasters, which are more and more frequently in Portugal and in Europe. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now I give the floor to James Schwarz. It's a fireman's leader, if I may say that.
Bom dia a todos. Uma saudação muito especial aos membros da comunidade europeia que hoje aqui nos visitam e com certeza que se vão também felicitar por poder vir a um país tão bonito como é Portugal e a uma cidade maravilhosa como é Lisboa. Depois desta primeira nota introdutória, eu gostaria de dizer que, subscrevendo as palavras do Sr. Presidente da Câmara, do Sr. Dual, não vou alimentar ou aprofundar aquilo que ele disse, e já o disse, não vale a pena repeti-lo, mas dizer-lhe que estou de acordo e que há que fazer um estudo muito profundo, mas eu diria uma autêntica refundação de alguns sistemas que efetivamente estão na área da proteção civil ou que têm responsabilidades na área de proteção civil em Portugal. E temos que fazer rapidamente, aproveitando efetivamente os erros com que nos deparámos neste ano de 2017 e também com respeito e memória às vítimas e às suas famílias. Nunca mais poderemos manter-nos como dantes. Há que encarar as situações e tentar resolvê-las. Claro que estas coisas também não se fazem como que tocadas por uma varinha de condão. São extremamente complexas, difíceis e tem que haver uma participação ativa de todos. E havendo uma máxima que diz que a proteção civil começa em todos e em cada um de nós, é uma realidade e temos que a interpretar como algo que é muito importante porque é um problema cultural de fundo nas sociedades. Mas também temos que efetivamente ter mecanismos para que as estruturas e as entidades que é em Portugal ligadas à proteção civil efetivamente façam exatamente aquilo que importa em relação dessa cultura de proteção civil e não se preocupem em áreas que efetivamente têm que ter um papel importante, mas não numa dimensão, por exemplo, de combate, mas numa dimensão de coordenação nacional todas estas questões da proteção civil. Há que refundar o sistema, está completamente errado. Não é aqui também que vamos discutir os problemas internos do nosso país. Mas devemos fazê-lo sem meias, sem peias, sem quaisquer problemas, todos procurando cada um dar o seu melhor para efetivamente o resolver. Mas temos que o fazer. Temos que o fazer, não podemos continuar a ser um país adiado dentro destes aspectos. Em relação a todas as políticas que têm sido feitas no caso concreto das florestas em Portugal, e os problemas não são só das florestas, há outros problemas de catástrofes, há os problemas da neve, há os problemas das inundações, há os problemas de um conjunto de situações que têm que ser todas enquadradas e todas analisadas à mesma dimensão e com as mesmas prioridades. Mas uma coisa é certa. Os erros que têm sido cometidos têm sido transversais a todos os governos deste país, pelo menos há 50 anos esta parte. E isso não vamos aqui politizar e muito menos partidarizar este tipo de discussões. Há que refletirmos porque o Estado desresponsabilizou-se das suas competências e das suas responsabilidades. Portanto, quando um Estado não assume aquilo que tem que ser as suas responsabilidades em relação a um setor tão difícil como este, depois toda a sociedade falha. Toda a sociedade falha porque tem que se rever nalguém que tenha a competência e a responsabilidade de determinar linhas de atuação para estas situações. E isso não aconteceu. Há pouco foi aqui dito, e o falhanço, por exemplo, que houve em Portugal, não está nos operacionais, não está na estrutura, efetivamente, daqueles que no terreno têm que fazer e fizeram bem aquilo que sabiam fazer. Há situações, como disse, que têm que ser reestruturadas e que não podemos continuar a aceitá-las. Mas o problema em Portugal é o problema da estrutura da sociedade, da floresta portuguesa. A floresta portuguesa está completamente abandonada, destruturada, sem planeamento, sem ordenamento. Não estivemos atentos às questões que nos foram ditas ao longo dos anos pela comunidade científica em relação ao aquecimento global do planeta. E em Portugal, com o fenómeno que se registou após o 25 de Abril, do êxodo das populações dos locais da floresta, do abandono da agricultura, da massificação de espécies que não são resistentes ao fogo, de não haver mosaico florestal, quer dizer, só se viu a floresta como, perante alguns, um lucro imediato e, perante outros, a falta de respeito daquelas populações envelhecidas e que não conseguiam, efetivamente, fazer essa melhoria na nossa floresta. Portanto, com todas as movimentações que se operaram, era fatal, como o destino, como dizem os portugueses, que tudo isto viesse a acontecer. Temos que, efetivamente, resolver esses problemas. E não é agora, com políticas em cima do joelho, a querer impor a todas e a todos que, efetivamente, limpem a floresta portuguesa, limpem as populações, limpem em torno das casas. Estamos a falar perante populações que, efetivamente, não têm condições nem físicas nem financeiras para o fazer, e está a tentar-se fazer por repressão aquilo que tem que ser feito por dissuasão, que tem que ser feito exatamente na afirmação de um valor, de uma cultura para a floresta portuguesa que não está, efetivamente, a ir pelos bons caminhos. Postas estas pequenas questões de introdução, eu gostaria de ir a um caso concreto que ouvi o Sr. Comissário referir, que é pela descentralização, que é contra a centralização. Estamos perfeitamente de acordo, mas eu gostaria de saber que meios pode dispor a comunidade europeia para, em termos descentralizados, os serem utilizados por Estados-membros, mas com respostas concretas e objetivas, e que tenham ser feitas com planeamento antecipado e que não possam resultar ou obterem-se respostas quando as situações já são dramáticas e são complicadas. O que é que, em termos de planeamento dos mecanismos europeus para a área da proteção civil, já estão devidamente e concretamente definidos para que os Estados-membros não tenham que andar à espera, à procura por qualquer lado, ou da intervenção da grande capacidade política de cada um, mas que antes, efetivamente, saibamos aquilo que já existe para o podermos utilizar. Muito obrigado, era só isto, e uma saudação muito amiga e fraterna dos bombeiros portugueses, de todos os bombeiros portugueses.
Thank you. Any other questions or remarks for the moment? No? So I give the floor. No, there is one? Ah, okay, please. Can you present yourselves?
Bom dia. Prefiro falar em português. José Ferreira, Presidente da Escola Nacional de Bombeiros. Queria agradecer as informações que o Sr. Comissário nos veio trazer. E, portanto, vou colocar a questão num outro patamar que não aquele que tem sido o das intervenções anteriores. Cooperação europeia, mecanismo europeu, o que pressupõe entreajuda, e para que a entreajuda seja eficiente, pressupõe igualmente as questões da formação dos agentes da proteção civil. E quando estamos a falar de vários países que concretamente se entreajudam, basicamente em duas grandes dimensões, na disponibilização de meios aéreos e, muitas das vezes, na chamada cooperação transfronteiriça, Portugal-Espanha, França-Itália, Espanha-França e assim sucessivamente, nós verificamos que existem matérias que importam também serem equacionadas. E a minha questão é exatamente esta. Se nesta perspectiva de reorganização do mecanismo e nesta nova lógica que se pretende dar um novo impulso, o que é que se pensa em matéria de formação em termos de o que é necessário de harmonização de procedimentos, o que é necessário de harmonização de competências, o que é necessário de harmonização de conhecimento e estratégias, enfim, existe aqui todo um conjunto de áreas técnicas de formação que importa um mecanismo também ter isso no âmbito das suas preocupações. E para terminar, dizer e informar, que tenho prazer nisso, de que com apoios da DG ECO, existem neste momento alguns projetos em que a Escola Nacional de Bombeiros participa, e nomeadamente com colegas de Itália, já que tenho aqui uma senhora de Itália, com os Vigili del Fuoco, por exemplo, em dois projetos europeus, exatamente nesta área, na definição de competências técnicas que devem ser harmonizadas para que os oficiais de ligação possam desempenhar bem, quer quem recebe, quer quem envia, no contacto no bom desempenho nos teatros operacionais. E, por fim, também uma outra importante técnica, que é hoje nós não podemos desencadear um grande incêndio florestal para treinar procedimentos. Hoje a tecnologia põe-nos à disposição e também estamos envolvidos num projeto financiado pela DGE, o projeto IGNIS, em que, utilizando as tecnologias da simulação de realidade virtual, podemos exatamente fazer o treinamento no âmbito de procedimentos, definição de táticas e tomadas de decisão. Como eu digo, são dois projetos em que Portugal, através da sua Escola Nacional de Bombeiros, está comprometida com vários parceiros europeus e que penso que esta dimensão no âmbito da revisão do mecanismo deverá ser igualmente tida em conta para o bem de toda a população europeia e não só. Muito obrigado.
Thank you. Very important remarks. It's very, very important. So I would give the floor to the professor to react and then to the commissioner.
Thank you. Well, most of questions I think were addressed to the commissioner, but I think I can comment on one or two issues. One is about the investment in prevention. I presented that graph there. I did not give any figures, and I also did not explain exactly what is happening. But we have the feeling that in Portugal there has been much more funds available to do the structural prevention than what is being used. And this is due to possibly to wrong options, to decisions that are not correct in options, for example, in approving projects. I know several stories of projects that were proposed exactly for the areas that were burned in central Portugal that were not approved because they did not reach some criteria of dimension, of size, although they were in the mostly risky area. And similar projects were approved for the south of Portugal, where the risk is very low, but where the property is larger. So I think there must be some changes in these criterion policies. So it's not so much the issue of having more money, but it's perhaps to have better decisions. This is in politics. Regarding the preparation of the people and the public, I think it is mandatory to create programs. Of course, we have to do with the entire program of protecting the forest, protecting the environment. But in these extreme conditions, this is what I try to stress, is that we have to give priority, and possibly the only priority can be given to protect the people. And sometimes people have to realize that they cannot expect to have a firefighter, a fire truck near their houses. And they have to prepare themselves beforehand to know what to do. In Portugal, there are several initiatives for several years, but they are still struggling. And I think now there is a more important effort and more concerted effort. And in this regard, I think also the European Commission could and should help in the promotion of these activities with some concerted guidance that we make use of the good experiences that are already being done in several places to put them all together. Okay, that's all.
Please, Commissioner.
Yes. Thank you, Elisabetta. Thank you so much for your contribution in this very fruitful discussion. And, of course, I completely agree with Elisabetta that it's quite important to hear your experience on the ground. And for us, it's very important to realize that definitely you know better than us about the situation on the ground, and this is why we are here to discuss with you, and we are here to hear you, to listen to you about your experience. I would like to say some remarks in some questions and some other comments in our discussion. First of all, I totally agree that we need to invest in prevention, and in particular, we need to invest in forest management and in the land management. And as Professor already focused on this, I think it's one of the major problems, not only in Portugal, but in all Mediterranean countries. So we have to invest in forest management and in land management. At the same time, I never say that we saw a lot of problems in operational activities. It's a part of the national responsibilities. It's a part of all your authorities and all your obligations. Rescue, and I would like to clarify it in a very clear manner, that rescue is only about exceptional cases. It's not about regular cases. And I strongly believe that our member state, they have enough staff, they have enough national capacities and resources in order to deal with the regular cases in forest fires, in floods, in all natural disasters. But because of the climate change, unfortunately, we will face with exceptional and extraordinary cases. And in this case, definitely, we need collective response. We need European collective response. And, for example, about forest fires. You know better than me that when we lost the opportunity to limit the fire in the first stage, in this case, we need helicopter and maybe Canadair. And as we know, with my colleagues in my services, ELCC Center, and Johannes is here as a director, and maybe we need his help, we need to increase our capacity with equipment in all levels of natural disasters, floods and fires, medical equipment, medical teams, mobile lamps, mobile hospital. So this is what we need through rescue. And I believe that, and this is why I said about economy of scale. If we decide, for example, to increase our capacities country by country, member state by member state, in particular in medical equipment or in Canadair, definitely we need a total amount more than 70, 80 Canadairs. But if we decide to make this collectively at the European level and to allocate, of course, these Canadair, we need only 12 or 15. This is the definition of the economy of scale, and this is what we would like to provide through RESC. So I would like to clarify this about economy of scale and about the role of the rescue regarding national capacities and resources. So no more staff, more equipment, adequate equipment in order to formulate adequately collective response. About financing, as I said, of course, through rescue and with collaboration with my colleagues Kretsu and Hokan, are in charge about structural funds and agricultural funds, I think we can finance more in prevention and in preparedness. And this is quite important, and I strongly believe that the national authorities at all levels, from the local level until ministerial level, they can utilize this opportunity through structural funds. And I'm sure that because of rescue, we can coordinate in a better way our efforts in order to fund and to finance these new initiatives about prevention and preparedness. I totally agree with you about harmonizing our technical figures and activities and to see together all European member states to improve ourselves. And this is why I insisted on this network. It's quite important to increase our collaboration in this field. And give me the chance to give the floor to my dear colleague Johannes, who is expert about all these things, to clarify it in more details our position as European Commission. Please, Johannes.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks a lot for the presentation, which was very, very interesting in our context. Maybe just 2 points. One, we have realized over time that the civil protection authorities in member states are not always in a position to use available money, sometimes because they even don't know that it exists, in particular in structural funds and rural development funds, which are part of structural funds. So we have taken now the initiative to bring the civil protection authorities together with the people in Brussels who manage structural funds, but we also want to bring together the civil protection authorities with the people inside the countries who manage the funds. I think we have a great occasion now because we're discussing the new multi-annual financial perspective that will start in 2021. So there is a bit of time now for countries like Portugal to say strategically we want to use the money in rural development, for instance, based on a national prevention and preparedness plan. And prevention is a medium to long-term effort, and we now have this opportunity. As the Commissioner said on the efforts you described, we are very keen on that. We have, for instance, now received from the European Parliament a pilot project for €1.5 million. And what we want to do with that money is exactly what you just described, both for forest fires and for floods. There are a lot of interoperability issues, and the presentation was so interesting because in Europe we don't even have a definition of what successful forest fire fighting is. That we also get to a bigger common denominator in terms of interoperability, in terms of definitions, in terms of objectives that we want to achieve. And last but not least, as the Commissioner mentioned, we want this knowledge network, and we foresee €7 million a year for that in the RescEU proposal. to make that more systematic, to institutionalize it, but the emphasis is also on network, to make sure that it's not something that is centralized based somewhere, but that every country can contribute. And a big ambition in that is also to bring the researchers and the academics in to get the best researched adaptation, because the worrying thing that we don't know is where these graphs the professor has shown will be going and where the peaks will be in 4 to 5 years, and the network should help us to be ready for that. Just maybe last but not least for the mayor, if you have initiatives for citizen information, if you have initiatives for getting the population in, our contact point is the colleague from Civil Protection. We are not a money machine. I can't promise you financing. What I can promise to you is that we will look in every corner, nook and cranny in Brussels, either in the Civil Protection budget or in structural funds or in the education budget, to see what we can do in financing. So if you have proposals, please pass them through to Civil Protection, and then we can discuss together what we can do. But we will definitely try to act on that.
Yeah. Of course.
Thank you, Johannes. And you can understand that we can give you a lot of information about financing, of course, but at the same time to separate some issues. I totally agree with Johannes that, of course, all of us, we are against centralization in many things. But at the same time, we need better coordination with academia, with first responders, and of course, with experts. And this is the role of the European Union, this is the role of ERCC Center in Brussels, to be the coordinator and to spread and to collect all information in order to improve ourselves in a different country, but also collectively. And this is quite important. Until now, frankly speaking, as DG ECHO and ERCC Center, we have this obligation to coordinate, but we didn't have tools. We didn't have instruments. And sometimes we realized ourselves that we try to provide assistance, we try to find ways in order to be on the ground, but it was impossible. And this is why, you know, Patricia, many times our hands are completely out of the ability to provide what we can do, what we can provide. So rescue is not only about equipment, is not only about our decisiveness to be on the ground, but it will give us more tools in order to play our role as coordinator in a better way, and at the same time to utilize academia and other information and to put all this knowledge, all this expertise on our on-the-ground activities. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I just want to say, everybody, that the person who spoke before you is the director of the European Emergency Coordination Center. Johannes Luckner. And if I may say, I think the center is the heart of the European mechanism, supporting all the activities from preparation till the response. So they are the boot on the ground in a certain way. And now I give the floor to another expert from Portugal. Is the professor Gil Martins, and he has a great experience in civil protection himself.
Muito bom dia a todos. Os meus cumprimentos ao Comissário Europeu, professor Xavier Viegas, os cumprimentos especiais e também agradecer o convite que me foi formulado para aqui estar presente em representação do Instituto Superior de Educação e Ciências de Lisboa. Eu queria colocar uma pergunta ao professor Xavier Viegas, uma ou duas ou três. Queria-lhe perguntar, por exemplo, quando fez a sua apresentação e falou a determinada altura que o incêndio de Pedrógão Grande estava incontrolável, se isso no seu pensamento também quer dizer incombatível. Pelas forças terrestres, combate aéreo, combate terrestre, combate direto, combate indireto, combate paralelo, o que é que seja. Se esse estado do incêndio é incombatível. A segunda questão que eu lhe queria colocar, também acerca do incêndio de Pedrógão Grande, era este. Perante aquela situação e aquelas condições meteorológicas, se, mesmo havendo faixas de prevenção primárias e secundárias, elas teriam tido alguma influência no comportamento do incêndio. A terceira questão que eu lhe queria colocar era se, naquelas condições de incêndio, a capacidade de colocar meios suficientes para fazer face à situação, se não é impossível face à rapidez de deslocação ou de progressão do incêndio. Estas as perguntas sobre o incêndio de Pedrógão, para de alguma forma ficar um bocadinho esclarecido as questões relacionadas com os vários inquéritos que foram feitos. Depois queria aproveitar as palavras do Sr. Presidente da Câmara, do Sr. Dual, que também cumprimento, dizendo que realmente o problema da proteção civil em Portugal é um problema político. É verdade, é um problema político. É um problema político, mas também é um problema de formação das pessoas, incluindo os políticos. Nós temos em Portugal um sistema de proteção civil que neste momento não é um sistema de proteção civil, é um sistema de combate a incêndios florestais. E, portanto, foi desvirtuada a sua identidade como um verdadeiro sistema de proteção civil que só atua em determinadas situações, da mesma maneira que o mecanismo europeu de proteção civil só funciona em situações de exceção. Os sistemas de proteção civil, da maneira como estão organizados, também só devem atuar em situações, eu diria, de emergência, não de exceção, mas de emergência, que é um bocadinho mais abaixo. E Portugal sofre de um problema neste momento, que é a confusão generalizada do que é um sistema de proteção civil. Generalizada, incluindo técnicos, incluindo operacionais, incluindo responsáveis, incluindo políticos, incluindo legisladores. Nós temos uma legislação que é absolutamente desastrosa neste aspecto, que tem sido alterada ao longo dos anos, mas não em conjunto. E, portanto, temos um quadro legislativo que é tudo menos esclarecedor sobre esta temática do sistema de proteção civil. Crer que a Autoridade Nacional de Proteção Civil se preocupe com uma ignição de incêndios é não perceber o que é o sistema de proteção civil. O sistema de proteção civil só deve atuar, para já é um sistema de decisão política e decisão técnica. E depois só deve atuar quando é acionado um plano de emergência, quer municipal, quer distrital, quer nacional. E, portanto, como os sistemas de proteção civil partem sempre daquele conceito, ou daquele princípio que se chama o princípio da subsidiariedade, é necessário que a organização municipal de proteção civil seja uma organização que funcione a sério. Que as pessoas que são responsáveis por essa organização, que saibam o que é que estão a fazer, que conheçam o sistema, que saibam o que é que devem fazer com o plano de emergência quando o ativam, porque a maior parte das pessoas não sabe o que é que deve fazer com o plano de emergência depois de estar ativado. E, portanto, é necessário, como diz o Sr. Comissário, tem dito e muito bem ao longo desta manhã, prevenção prioritária, prontidão prioritária. Eu acho que há aqui outra questão prioritária, que é a questão ligada à preparação das pessoas, ao conhecimento das pessoas e à formação e qualificação das pessoas. E, portanto, provavelmente, os fundos estruturais da União Europeia Além do investimento na prevenção, além no investimento na prontidão, se calhar também valeria a pena fazerem um grande investimento em termos de Programa Nacional de preparação dos cidadãos, todos os cidadãos em Portugal, independentemente do seu grau de responsabilidade ou do seu grau de intervenção na vida portuguesa. E, portanto, acho que, em termos de preparação, acho que era indispensável que se pensasse seriamente nisto, até porque se nós, e provavelmente o professor Xavier Viegas poderá confirmar isto, se nós formos ver os incêndios de 15 de outubro, os incêndios florestais de 15 de outubro, eles foram provocados pelas pessoas, mas pelo desconhecimento das pessoas que não deviam fazer fogo perante as condições meteorológicas que estavam a existir naquele momento. As pessoas acabaram por fazer o fogo, estão habituadas a fazer fogo na floresta, quando sabem que um ou dois dias depois vai chover. Só que as condições meteorológicas naquela data eram perfeitamente desastrosas para quem quisesse provocar o fogo na floresta. Preparação das populações, alerta precoce, capacidade de antecipação e ação. Ação. A proteção civil tem um conceito que já não se usa e diz na nossa lei de bases de proteção civil que a proteção civil reage. Mentira. A proteção civil cada vez mais tem que ser ação, tem que ser antecipação, tem que ser conhecimento da informação e gestão da informação para poder garantir algumas questões ligadas à proteção das populações. Finalmente, a propósito desta evolução da proteção civil europeia, eu perguntava, também lançava esta questão ao Sr. Comissário, no sentido de saber se, por exemplo, através do exemplo do Frontex ou da Frontex, se a proteção europeia não poderia avançar para uma organização europeia deste tipo, do mesmo género da Frontex, enfim, com algumas adaptações necessárias, mas julgo que o Frontex seria uma boa base para fazer evoluir a proteção civil ao nível da Europa, embora saibamos que existe sempre esta dicotomia entre aquilo que são os países do Norte da Europa, que têm problemas e riscos diferenciados, daquilo que são os países da bacia mediterrânica, que têm outro tipo de preocupações, se bem que as alterações climáticas daqui a 10 anos podem alterar este tipo de situações e, portanto, poderemos ter, eventualmente, cheias no sul da Europa e incêndios florestais no norte da Europa. Muito obrigado.
Thank you. Now I give the floor to Alexandro Gouveia from Instituto Sacarneiro.
Yeah. Obrigado. Depois dos acontecimentos que foram aqui hoje descritos, que se passaram no último verão e que todos nós infelizmente conhecemos, com certeza que as autoridades portuguesas, em conjugação com os nossos parceiros europeus, começaram a refletir no tipo de alterações que têm que ser implementadas no terreno para que no próximo verão o sistema de detecção dos fogos na sua fase inicial, no Early Warning System, como se costuma dizer, e também em termos de prevenção, esse sistema possa ser todo reformulado e melhorado, porque em face das alterações climatéricas já se constatou que o sistema antigo não serve. E embora eu tenha consciência que mudar um sistema de prevenção é uma tarefa de médio e longo prazo, eu gostava de aproveitar a presença aqui connosco hoje da doutora Patrícia da Proteção Civil para, se fosse possível, para saber quais são as medidas que já estão a ser equacionadas, as principais medidas que estão a ser equacionadas, não só em termos de investimentos, mas também em termos de reorganização na logística do combate e da prevenção dos incêndios, que nos possam, de alguma forma, ter uma esperança de que no próximo verão a fiscalização e o combate ao incêndio vai já ser bastante diferente do que se passou no verão passado.
Okay, thank you. Now you have...
Thank you for the floor. I'm going to speak in Portuguese, but after this comment from Alexandre, I didn't know he was supposed to say this, and I was trying to find try to centralize this debate on the mechanism. We were listening our colleagues about the situation in Portugal, and I would like to say that this debate in this seminar was supposed to debate how can we use this mechanism and how we can help the European Union to change the mechanism or to adapt it to the best purposes. But in this case, I'm forced to say that more important than debate what happened during this summer, and who knows me know that I would like to debate it, and very strongly, but it's not polite from my side to say that and to do that, and especially to do that during this debate. And we invite all these people to be here, all these partners, to speak and to debate with the Commissioner and with the Professor Xavier Viegas and with all of us to try to understand how this mechanism can be useful and how can we change it and what the sector can expect from this mechanism to increase our answer to these threats. That's why I would like to ask this case to the Commissioner and to ask all of you in your areas what you think EU can help you more with means, with knowledge, with training, with education, or with money, or if you need more money to buy more helicopters, or if you just need more money to invest ourselves, or if we need a mechanism that is faster to answer. I was talking yesterday with our former minister of this area, and we were talking about how fast were the Canadairs from the member states, and she was mentioning that but the Canadairs from Morocco, they were faster arriving. Oh no, I know that Morocco is just nearby, but the decision at the EU level were not so fast as a decision from a minister in Morocco. I know that democracies takes time to decide, but I don't want to compare. But I think we need to see how this mechanism could be more efficient, can be more helpful, and if we have many fights in Europe, we have many, many challenges, and Professor was talking about Frontex. And one of the main problems of Frontex is to accept that a general from other country is coming to our country to decide. If we have problems in Portugal, when some commandants are coming from Algarve to take care of fires in the north, or from the north to take care of fires in the south, you can imagine a French commandant to come to Portugal to take a decision during a fire. But mainly the problem now, I think, it's how can we be more efficient, and if you can help us, and if you can help EU to take the best decisions at this level. So thank you very much. It's just my comment, not as an organizer, but as a member of this parliament. And to finish, just to mention one thing. One of the problems nowadays about the civil protection is when politicians are trying to take decisions that are decisions from the sector. Yes. And we need to give them means, we need to decide options, but we cannot say, during this last summer, there was one representative from the firemen saying, finally we saw bulldozers working in fires. It's completely crazy. I've been seeing it in the last 15 years, and was one top leader of the civil sector. And other thing was another mayor saying, thanks God, the Secretary of State sent helicopters to my county, to my region. A politician doesn't send helicopters to anywhere. He should be quiet. The commandants should send helicopters and decide where they should go. So those are our problems, and we need to fight to do it. But this part, I think you can take care of it inside of our country, not at the EU level. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Elisabetta. And my final remarks, maybe, because the discussion is very, not only fruitful, but very passionate, and this is very good for all of us. Why not? Firstly, I strongly believe that we have to create rescue in order to avoid such painful experience as we live in Portugal last summer. And we saw, frankly speaking, the inability of the European mechanisms to deliver assistance at the critical time in Portugal. Yes, as simple as that. So, and this is why we are discussing about rescue. We need new instrument, we need new tools in order to deliver assistance immediately in order to save lives. And I strongly believe that we need experts to decide, and we don't need politicians to decide about where we need to deliver assistance. So, and this is why in our proposal we focus on this, about who will be in the decision-making process. Definitely, I completely agree with member of the institute about
Alexandro.
Yes, about your remark for the warning system and the new scientific instrument in order to be more preventive and to see together how to predict and how to make in the reality the culture of prevention, the culture of preparedness. And this is why I strongly believe that we can use financing in order to cultivate the culture of prevention among our citizens. It's a part of our obligation to cultivate this culture, and we can utilize structural funds. It's a part of your decision to utilize this money in this completely correct direction. You asked me about Frontex. And as I understood, you believe that maybe it's better to use the same similar structure with Frontex instead of the current proposal. I want to be very sincere. We avoided to think about any new agency outside of the current structure within our institutions because, first of all, it was impossible to pass this idea through council. It was a sort of a deadlock and from the starting point of this discussion. So I'm very pragmatic, and because I would like the commissioner to see real improvement of the current system, and this is why we already followed this way to see at least the minimum improvement of the current system. So this is why we are talking about evolution and not revolution of the current system. But I believe that if we see the whole package of these proposals from the basis of the pyramid in connection with this pyramid, responsibility, solidarity comes with responsibility, and we emphasize on this that, look, national authorities, local authorities, regional authorities, national resources are the main instrument to deal with natural resources, disasters, and also to see the improvements at this level in the current voluntary pool and our new financing through this middle level of this pyramid, and then to realize where is the concrete role of rescue. I think if we can clarify and see the whole package, we can understand that this whole package is very realistic, is very pragmatic, and through this package we can deliver, yes, immediate assistance to our member state and to avoid such shameful experience as in Portugal last summer. So it is rescue, it is a whole package. It's not only the top of the pyramid. It's a whole package, prevention and preparedness, cultivate cultural prevention at the first level basis of the pyramid, improve our achievements in the voluntary pool, and then in exceptional cases, we have to use rescue as the only way. Yes.
Now, before your very closing remarks, we have another remarks last.
Yes, of course.
Yes, when you want. Okay. So, because we have Jeffrey Gordon from the Center for a Secure Society. He came on purpose. And so I would like to give the floor before you close the meeting.
Thank you. Obrigado. Grazie. Having been a Pentagon spokesman in the past for 4 years and previous to that, having been a naval officer serving around the world, I've participated in many disaster relief operations. And I found that one of the things that exacerbates the problems is a lack of preparedness. So I agree 100% with you and Elisabetta having a focus on being better prepared. Part of that is cracking down on criminal organizations who engage in deforestation and illegal construction, unauthorized construction, for instance. 20 years ago, for instance, I participated in disaster release operations in Italy, in Sarno. There was a town destroyed by mudslides, and a lot of the reasons for the problems is over 100 people died and thousands were left homeless because of illegal construction. And so I think the effort from member states to crack down on those type of activities is very important to make sure we are better prepared. I'd also like to mention that the U.S. is about $20 trillion in debt right now, and during my time in the Navy, we prided ourselves in responding around the world, and I have responded personally, but the U.S. is certainly not in the same situation we were in 20 years ago. So that's why I would like to congratulate and thank you for all the great work the European Union is doing for civil protection, because it's making a great difference and it's very much appreciated. I was very happy to see you were in Chile. My spouse is from Chile. So it's great to see you doing great work around the world. And thank you for the invitation today. My great friends Paulo Rangel and Guillermo Martinez Casan for the great invitation, another great EIN event.
Thank you so much. Paulo. You are the boss.
So, I think you have already noticed that is one of the reasons why some of my initial remarks probably were not very easily understood. I'm also myself needing some rescue, but is from healthcare, because I'm with a terrible flu since Monday, but even though we have achieved very, very good results this week in the European Parliament. We have managed to approve the new distribution of seats and to impede the creation of transnational lists that could be a major mistake for the European cohesion. But this being said, I'd like to say that, first, it's very clear that we have to coordinate and articulate all the prevention efforts with the civil protection mechanisms. And so that there, it's really, I'd say, necessary, it is compulsory to have a full transparency between the two systems, because they are very intimately linked. Of course, they are different levels of intervention. The medium-term, long-term prevention is one level. The civil protection is much more short-term reaction. Even if we have to prepare even our civil protection forces at national level and also at European level in a medium-term perspective. But that is also, it is also very, very clear that we can do it preparing our EU civil protection mechanism and also reforming our national civil protection mechanisms with the perspective also of the medium term, that is climate change. When we are here talking about extreme phenomena in natural catastrophes, especially related to weather, what we are saying is that we have to reinvent our civil protection for new phenomena or for a different frequency of the phenomena. Sometimes they are not new, but they are much more frequent. So the response has to be necessarily different. So I think this was here quite clear. Then one thing that I found deeply interesting here is that as we are still very affected, very much affected by the trauma of the last summer fires, naturally it is very clear that we try to link the reflection about the future, on the future schemes of intervention, with our experience of the failures of some in preparation, even of some surprise, and also from the mistakes, not only the mistakes of our structures, but also of our population. When I say this, what I also would like to stress, and I have written about this plenty of times as I'm a teacher, that is for me unbelievable that there is not a program every year in the schools about different issues of civil protection. For instance, in the case, there are very, very... I remember when I was a child, I was in a Catholic school, where, for instance, we had all these instructions about how to behave in the streets, how to cross the street, so to have safety for children, how to convince parents to have some care when they were driving, where should children sit, etc., etc. Nothing was compulsory at those times in terms of transporting children. But this was very... Every year, the... we call it Prevenção Rodoviária, made an exercise one day with all the children. For instance, in the case of Lisbon, the region of Lisbon, it's obvious that we can have a huge earthquake one day. We know that one day there will be in Portugal, not necessarily in Lisbon, but there are two or three regions, Algarve, Lisbon, others, where there are very, very high risks. All the Portuguese students should be prepared every year to do a test in their schools how to behave in these cases. This same pedagogy could be done with the fire issues. We have seen that in October in special, there were really people that were not so careful. But probably they were not also aware of the weather conditions, very, very specific of these days.
So not only the communication in media is very important, but also the training. And when I speak about schools, I also speak about enterprises, workplace. Every enterprise could have also an action for civil protection. It's not so, it's nothing so special. Of course, I'm sure that our authorities in civil protection would love to do this, but of course they don't have not even budget nor personnel to do this at a national scale. So this should be something that should be first included, in my view, in the curricula of education for the schools. And then gradually we could also do this at another level. We see, for instance, in the case of earthquakes, the Japanese experience is amazing. The people are trained for very stressing situations, how to behave, to not to panic, to organize the response. And the truth is that not only because they have very good building security in the last 20, 30, 40 years, but people are trained to respond. What I was trying to say is that civil protection is a responsibility of governments, of administration, of authorities, of European Commission. But it is, because it is civil protection, a citizen's responsibility also. It's not only a right of the citizens to have civil protection authorities working. It's a responsibility of the citizens. They should be also committed, and they should be aware that they have this responsibility. So I'm not in any case reducing the importance of the discussion that we have here. I'm always adding this. Yes. So, to end, and then to introduce our last speaker and our major host, you'd say, I would like to say that I have always defended the creation not of an European Union civil protection mechanism that, in my view, with this EU-Rescue, is already a major step. And it will be a big improvement when compared with what we have 1 year or 2 years ago. So we are boosting this competence at European level. But I truly believe that it's possible to have, in some years' time, an European force of civil protection. And I must say that I'm a federalist, despite people think that I am not, because I'm against transnationalists, but transnationalists doesn't exist in federations. There's no federation with transnationalists, not the United States, not Germany, not Belgium. So I'm a true federalist. I see two pillars to prepare one day an European real defense system. And the two pillars to be, I'd say, a kind of laboratory, a kind of experience. One is European force of civil protection, to create a corp that can, of course it won't be an army, nothing to do, but can be a test how can we cooperate the 27 now to create this kind of structures that are, in this case, paramilitary, I'd say. So they are civil, but they also have a discipline. They really suppose also something, some skills that are not only civil skills. And also the coast and border guard that we have already created. These two pillars that are not really an army, not at all, but they have some resemblance, they have some links, they are in between the civil structures and the military structures. They could be two successive cases to have in the future a defense structure at European level. So I'm not only thinking in what is really more important, that is the welfare of European people, of our citizens, and naturally that is to respond to them in an efficient way. I'm also thinking in the building of institutional framework in the future for a deepened European Union. And with this optimistic message, I would like to thank you all, and I would like to thank all the ones that here have intervened. I must say that we know that you have fought very, very intensely during this year, and that you have suffered also very, very much. Not only the victims, but the people that are rescuing are sharing the suffering in a way that is, in a lot of times, very traumatic. And probably we politicians that are a bit more distant from the ground, the ones that are not directly involved, sometimes we are not aware of this sharing of the mayors, of the firemen, of the civil protection structures and so on, that have to cope and to live with the people that are suffering and to share with them. They have to be, in a certain way, the first friends and the families in the first moments of despair and panic. And so now I would give the floor to Hugo Soares, that is the chairman of our parliamentary group here, and I would like to thank him very much for hosting this event here in this excellent room. It's really, I'd say, a privilege to have such a discussion in such an environment. And naturally, I think that we will conclude in the best way with these final remarks. Thank you very much.
Bom dia a todos. Eu queria, em primeiro lugar, pedir desculpa por não ter estado convosco durante toda a manhã, mas a verdade é que os trabalhos parlamentares não pararam e eu tive que estar com outros a fazer também, eles que me obrigaram a não poder cá estar. Mas queria, em primeiro lugar, cumprimentar o Sr. Comissário, agradecer-lhe muito por poder participar connosco neste encontro, dizer que é para nós, o Grupo Parlamentar do PSD, uma honra poder contar consigo hoje e dizer-lhe que é também muito simbólico que em Portugal, hoje, nesta ocasião, se possa fazer esta discussão consigo e, por isso, não queríamos deixar de fazer esse registro. Cumprimentar a Sra. Deputada do Parlamento Europeu, relatora de todo este processo, e dizer-lhe também do gosto que é e da honra poder contar consigo neste encontro. Saudar o meu querido amigo Paulo Rangel, que é, desde a primeira hora, um dos grandes promotores deste evento, juntamente com o Grupo do Partido Popular Europeu e com o Instituto Sá Carneiro em Portugal, e dizer-lhe que sempre pode contar, como sempre contará, com o Grupo Parlamentar do PSD para este tipo de iniciativas. Eu creio, de resto, que esta inter-relação entre aquilo que os nossos deputados ao Parlamento Europeu, sejam eles de que partido for, com as forças políticas que desempenham as suas funções nas restrições nacionais, me parece absolutamente necessário para que nesta Europa cada vez mais próxima possamos atuar de acordo com aquilo que são os anseios das nossas populações. Queria dizer-vos que este encontro, este vosso encontro, é a prova provada que podemos reunir à mesma mesa gentes de várias sensibilidades, gentes que conhecem o setor como ninguém, pessoas que são altamente especializadas nesta área e que têm dedicado anos de estudo a matérias como a proteção civil e que é possível, entre todos, podermos fazer discussões sérias sem que, numa lógica tão habitual na Europa e em Portugal, cada uma das áreas, permitam-me, as academias, as forças armadas, os bombeiros voluntários, os bombeiros profissionais, os autarcas, procurem normalmente defender aquilo que são as suas competências, o seu know-how na matéria, e esta é uma daquelas áreas onde as sinergias, todas elas aglutinadas, podem e devem fazer muito melhor. Queria só deixar-vos outras notas, eu não tive, como vos disse, oportunidade de acompanhar a vossa discussão, mas parece-me absolutamente fundamental que, também do ponto de vista europeu, se crie condições para que possamos atuar de forma rápida perante aquilo que são cada vez mais e mais frequentes catástrofes que nos têm assolado, mas sobretudo também ao nível da proteção. Eu, quando preparava algumas notas sobre o tema aqui de hoje, e considero extremamente feliz a designação de Rescue para o novo mecanismo, ou nova forma de operacionalizar o mecanismo de proteção civil europeia,
Creio que, apesar da felicidade da designação, nestas matérias é fundamental, sobretudo, a prevenção. E quando nós podemos atuar a montante das situações, parece-me que, evitando que tenhamos que vir a socorrer as pessoas, é sempre muito melhor. Nós entendemos que, quer naquilo que vem a ser o novo quadro comunitário de apoio, o reforço daquilo que são os montantes destinados para segurança e defesa é absolutamente determinante para que possamos, também na área da proteção civil, dar passos do ponto de vista europeu que nos aproximem a todos. Eu creio que o Paulo Rangel tem profunda razão quando dizia, eu que não sou um federalista, mas quando dizia que se há caminho que se pode fazer do ponto de vista europeu de integração dos vários Estados-membros, é do ponto de vista das áreas da defesa, como agora se viu com o mecanismo de cooperação estruturada permanente, e é também na área da proteção civil. Há exemplos, partilha de conhecimento de mecanismos de outros Estados. Nós tivemos ocasião, de resto, de propor há dias, em sede do Parlamento Português, a criação de uma estrutura no âmbito das Forças Armadas que pudesse ter um papel muito mais ativo naquilo que diz respeito à proteção civil, e há, por isso, vários exemplos nos Estados-membros que devem ser aproveitados. Parece-me, sobretudo, que nestes novos passos que estamos a dar, e queria aqui, de uma forma muito especial, saudar o comprometimento com esses passos, com este objetivo do Sr. Comissário, que me parece que foi muito pronto e muito lesto a reagir às várias realidades que nos vão assolando, dizia-vos que há realmente questões que são estruturantes. Muito mais importante do que saber onde é que os meios vão estar posicionados, muito mais importante do que saber se todo o novo mecanismo, toda a estrutura do novo mecanismo está no Estado-membro X ou Y, é importante é fazer uma lógica de pré-posicionamento de meios capaz de responder, sobretudo aos países que mais dificuldades têm atravessado. Nós fazemos este seminário cerca de 6 meses depois de uma tragédia gigante que assolou o nosso país, como todos saberão. Morreram pessoas, pessoas viram as suas vidas destruídas, perderam todo o seu património, todos os seus bens, pessoas que construíram as suas vidas e que de um momento para o outro viram que, de facto, quando nós políticos lhes falhamos, porque é a obrigação de nós políticos não falharmos nestas circunstâncias, a vida dessas pessoas pode, de facto, transformar-se num verdadeiro pesadelo ou até perderem mesmo as próprias vidas. E eu queria aqui hoje também, permitam-me aqueles que vieram de fora, mas nesta primeira oportunidade que tenho de estar com muita gente que esteve no terreno a fazer o melhor que podia e sabia para ajudar aquelas pessoas e combater aquilo que foi uma tragédia, talvez a maior dos últimos 30 anos em Portugal, queria aqui também prestar o meu sincero e profundo agradecimento. Nós sabemos que nem tudo correu da melhor forma, mas eu não tenho dúvidas que cada uma e cada um de nós, e aqui incluo-me como responsável político também, fizemos o melhor que sabíamos e podíamos para acudir àquelas populações. O que nós queremos é que esta Europa, que é o projeto de paz mais bem-sucedido de sempre, possa também ser um projeto de proteger as pessoas perante este tipo de catástrofes. E creio, como vos dizia, que os passos que estão a ser dados são absolutamente determinantes para que assim seja. No mais, queria desejar a todos uma excelente continuação em Portugal. Como dizia o Paulo Rangel, e bem, esta é uma sala de debate político, de debate parlamentar, mas é também no debate político e no debate parlamentar de que nascem as ideias, que se constroem os projetos e que se constroem as soluções. E o Grupo Parlamentar do PSD poder hoje estar associado a esta discussão e a mais este passo na construção europeia é para nós uma grande honra, e por isso eu queria agradecer a todos.
Okay, so we finished our meeting. Everybody?
Everybody.
Oh, it's okay.
No more words,
no more remarks, and no more questions.
Practical actions.
Yes, now ready to work. Thank you.